All right, folks, welcome back. Yes, back-to-back days or back-to-back podcasts in your feed. Two podcasts close together in football. That's right. MWR.com. It's championship week. Jeremy Moss here hanging out with, this time, the other Matt. Well, we have two Matts, so let's just say the other Matt each time I talk to him. Matt Kennerly for our non-homerific podcast. Maybe a little bit because we know Matt's a Fresno guy, but you ready? How excited are you for this one? Or scared? What's better?
I don't know if excitement is the right word. It's like a creeping dread.
Is it a nervous anticipation?
I think a lot of other people are more optimistic than I am.
Okay.
Because I was talking to someone on Twitter after the game, and they were talking about how they had been in the vicinity of Fresno State players who, in paying attention to last Saturday's game between Boise State and Utah State, they wanted the Broncos. And so now it's like, okay, well, you got them, so we'll see.
Let's do this. Okay, first off, we'll get to the game. We got some newsy stuff. Also, like I mentioned, two podcasts. We had Matt Wedley and our good buddy Raj Prabal, Boise Fresno guy. I kind of just hung out, kind of gave my two cents here and there. So some of that stuff might be repeated by me a little bit. So if you want to go here, just like I said, they just went at it. Like, I didn't care. It's like, say what you want to say. You can say the team's terrible and have nothing to back it up, which they did not really do at all. So it was still very informative, but we wanted to bring those guys on to listen to that. You have this here. And before we get to the games, before we get to Matt, we got to discuss for a moment San Jose State Fresno at the end at some point. But let's get to some new stuff. So bowl eligible teams. We have seven. Matt, how many spots does the conference have?
Officially five, am I correct?
You are correct. Five. Cheez-It Bowl is a backup, which, depending how things work out with the Oklahoma-Texas game, could open up. Mm-hmm. I don't see Oklahoma getting the playoff, but craziness could happen. And the one problem is, Wyoming is going to be left out. Craig Thompson's basically said as much. I think he's on KTIK on Tuesday this week or Thursday, whenever it was, Wednesday. I don't know. One day this week, depending when you're listening, doesn't matter. Basically said Wyoming's on the outside looking in. So I went through it. I put up a piece yesterday, and our guy Jesse's going to have something else as well. Because did you know, Matt, have you seen who Wyoming has lost to this year?
Yeah, I saw the list that Jesse put out there. And it's one of those instances where, you know, Wyoming, in the grand scheme of things, took care of business against teams that they probably should have taken care of, but were punching up a little bit against some pretty good opponents, all things considered.
Yeah, Washington State, Boise State, Utah State. I think every team that lost to Missouri has been ranked or is currently ranked at some point in the year.
Yeah.
And so problem is you have six losses. I don't know where that seventh win could have come from. I guess Hawaii is a really bad one, but Hawaii has eight wins.
Yeah, they let that one against the Warriors get away from them, because if you recall, Chevin Cordero came in the fourth quarter and led them on a last-ditch touchdown drive.
Just like versus UNLV he did.
Mm-hmm.
So they're on the outside looking in, partly because there's going to be 81, maybe 82 bowl-eligible teams, depending on what Virginia Tech does, which they're a makeup game versus Marshall, and they're, I think, a five-point favorite, despite Marshall having, eight or nine wins. Go figure. G5 bias, I don't know. But they're going to get in no matter what. So basically, with the Mountain West having five spots, wins matter because it doesn't matter if you have seven wins, you're getting in before a six-win team for extra spots. And we already know BYU is getting in regardless because they were supposed to go to the Poinsettia Bowl, which would have been not this year, but we were familiar with that bowl game. They're in no matter what with six. And so there's no realistic way. And looking through who has more bowl-eligible teams and bowl spots, you have the Mountain West. I think I put in there, I should have in front of me, I think the MAC. Mm-hmm. Also, how the heck does Conference USA have seven bowl bids?
Their commissioner's doing work, apparently.
Ooh, Craig Thompson, another jab, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, maybe it could also just be the fact that there are more places, theoretically, to hold a bowl the further east you go.
Well, also, that's why the Conference doesn't want to go back to, the Liberty Bowl or go to, was it a Cure Bowl? A couple years ago, San Jose State went. They'd rather, because look where the bowl games are at. Vegas, Arizona, Hawaii, Idaho, New Mexico. So they're all west. You can go into Texas a little bit, but there's also no real Midwest bowls either unless you go to the Indianapolis, I think. There's a bowl game there where the MAC champ usually goes.
Yeah, I think the Quick Lane Bowl's in Detroit.
Yeah, so it's even a little bit farther east and central, but that's part of it. But it just sucks because also it's kind of interesting. I'm part of some San Diego State fan group for some reason on Facebook. Just I got in there years ago. I'm like, oh, I'll post our stuff occasionally. There's people freaking out that the Aztecs aren't going to a bowl game. I chimed in.
No,
like,
the Aztecs are going to a bowl game.
I'm like, calm down. There's too much fear. I put in there because our buddy Ted put some of our stuff in there, and so we kind of chat back and forth. I'm looking at it. I'm like, there's this one guy. I'm like, oh, I got an alert. Let's go. Just curious occasionally to see. Like, what are we going to do? Maybe these guys should get a kick in the butt by not going to the bowl game. Like, really? You're going to – that's going to motivate guys who aren't playing anymore after this year to sit in the couch and watch football when they get one last chance to ever, ever shoot up and play this type of football ever again? So it's like, no. First off, that's stupid. If you get – I used to be, there's too many bowl games, which there are, but I'll watch them all. I'll watch as many as possible. I'll check scores on a lot of these. So I'd prefer not five-win teams. That's kind of where I draw the line. I'd rather have good football, but if there's an option to go, go. And then you see all this ludicrous, like, hey, a 10-win Army team could be left out. I'm like, no, they're not going to be left out.
No.
Because they're not going to pull a Louisiana Tech a couple years ago and say, we're going to wait for a better bowl game, then get left out, then lose their head coach, and then this happens. They're in, but Aztec fans, you're fine. Wyoming fans, it does suck because they've dropped a couple bowl games. And we all know, man, every Power 5 team's going to get in because bowl games, it's a TV show, it's an event. They want to sell tickets. Mm-hmm. So Wyoming, Louisiana Monroe, whatever these extra teams I pointed out that aren't guaranteed a spot because their bowl allotment fills out, that's unfortunate. There's a small hope, I'd say, if somehow, well, this will transition to our next topic in a moment, if the American doesn't get the near six bid, which means Memphis wins,
mm-hmm.
and then you have Boise, Fresno winner get in, that's going to help, but I still don't know if that's going to be enough.
Kind of a big if at this point.
I think it also help if the here's why I think how Wyoming can get into a bowl game. Cheese Bowl opens up because somehow Oklahoma gets to the playoff, and then Boise Fresno winner gets the near six game because that should give the Mountain West seven spots. But that's a lot to happen, and Wyoming's just kind of like, holy crap, come on, root for this, root for that.
They might as well, right?
Who doesn't want chaos? Also, you know, really chaos. Some people, it's kind of mean for me to say, but I'll say it because we know UCF's good, but we're still hesitant to say they're top 10 good. Right? Is that okay to say?
Yeah. I mean, at this point, I don't know. Whatever.
Would you like – here's what I'd like to see, but it'll still be backlash. Chaos happened. They move up to 4 and lose 80-0 versus Alabama.
They're not going to lose 80-0 to Alabama.
Okay, 64-5.
No. Well, without Milton, maybe.
That's what I'm saying. And that's kind of mean to say, but it's like – if they had Milton, that'd be fine to see, and they do a fine job, but whatever. Actually, there's one more news bit, Matt. Let's have the other Matt, Matt Wells, Texas Tech.
Another Matt, yeah.
He's apparently one of the leaders, front runners to the guys out the Lubbock Avalanche, I believe it's called.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that? Do they want to have Matt Wells? Because if you look at I looked at the Twitter feed of the guy who broke the news about, hey, he's a front runner. Every gif or response was, why? This is terrible. No.
See, here's the thing. I mean, I'm not a head coach, obviously.
No, me neither. Just to clarify, we're neither head coaches.
If I had the choice between $1 million and living in Logan, or, I don't know, let's say $3 million to live in Lubbock, I've never been to either place, but I'm pretty sure Logan's a little bit nicer than being in the middle of nowhere.
Logan, I've been to Logan, Utah. It is isolated. However, and it's also freezing cold in the winter, one of the coldest places in the state of Utah. It's extremely pretty if you like that, the foliage in the fall, like late September, early October, beautiful.
Which I do.
Yes. If you like to go hiking, those type of things, that's nearby, which I don't know how much time they have. But also, you are good if you want to do something in Salt Lake. You are 90 minutes from Salt Lake City. There's also a town north of like Ogden, which is kind of a metropolitan area, just not quite as big. You're about an hour from there. You're kind of tucked away, but not really tucked away from if you want to go do big stuff. And it's not a super small town because I've been to, like, people talk about, there's this little town kind of, if you go from Utah down to Colorado, there's an off the beaten pathway to get to I-70. It's kind of like where Provo is at, which is where BYU is located, which is growing and growing. There's a spot where it's kind of the opposite of the spectrum. It's called, Nephi or Price or something, whatever, some coal town. Super tiny, smaller than Logan, but it's just kind of a similar thing, but opposite direction. They'll put billboards, hey, you're only 80 miles, 90 miles from the big city mall in Provo, Utah to go see the University Mall, which it's nice. It's just, it's kind of a little humorous, this super small town, but it's not like Logan. So you're, it's kind of the same spectrum. I'd rather be in Logan in that small town because there's literally nothing out there because there's not a college town of 20,000 minimum. You know what I mean? 10,000 students plus whomever. And in Lubbock, they call it Mars essentially because it is what it is. I've driven through Lubbock going from Utah to Houston. Wasteland, nothing. Like, you're not to get to anywhere. It's, there's nowhere to get anywhere. You're not near El Paso, which is a decent sized city. You're six, eight hours from Dallas. You're, that's basically the halfway point from Salt Lake City to Houston, almost like a 12-hour difference. So you're not near anything.
Well, and see, and here's the thing, like, even just thinking about the job in respect to the competition that Wells or anybody else would step into, do you really want to go in and year out against Oklahoma at this point?
Or you know, Texas. Do you,
or Texas.
Or
which,
TCU. Or Oklahoma.
I don't know. Have we determined whether Texas is officially back or not?
I'll allow it.
Okay. So you're dealing with those two teams, you know, and I mean, I just don't know. I mean, I know that the rest of the conference is mostly kind of iffy, but what is the guarantee that he's going to do any better than Cliff Kingsbury did?
Who, by the way, did improve that defense to be at least average in the Big 12 when it was garbage with Mike Leach, who cared zero anything about defense.
Mm-hmm.
So that's also one last thing. We'll move on. And it's still early. It's not clear. It's sub one reporter, which I'm assuming he's in the mix because Colorado's, his name's been brought up as is Brian Harsin. We're not going to dive into that, but this has been more tangible than just saying, hey, he's a good fit because he's a West Coast guy. Mm-hmm. Couple things. Recruiting's a big deal. He's only coached at New Mexico for a couple years in Tulsa, so that's in the region. But you could also get leftovers and be fine in Texas Tech. And are they thinking he's going to bring this great defense? Because Matt Wells is an offensive guy. He's never been coaching the defense side of the ball, ever. Mm-hmm. He's always been tight end coach, running back coach, OC, obviously head coach. And how much is it David Yost, or is it how much Matt Wells? Because he brought in Yost after losing Heupel, who, when Heupel's now at UCF, the offense wasn't very good. Mm-hmm. And so what do you want from him? Do you want him to bring – does Texas Tech want the same system that they've always had? Then you bring in Wells and Yost because that makes the most sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's Yost offense, essentially. Or do you want to think he'll do great defense? But what's a good defense in the Big 12? Giving up 35 points a game instead of 45? I don't know. I'm just, and he's not going to get $3 million. They're going to pay less. He's getting, like, I think his, if Wells stays, his salary bumps up to right around $1 million. He's like nine, what did I put in the article? Just over 900K. Okay, if they pay him $2 million, is that worth it? Like you said, the money, is that much money worth it? And the headache of how are you going to recruit to Lubbock? How do you have a private plane to go everywhere? Because there's no airport nearby, man.
Yeah.
All right, we're good. Let's move to games. Are we good? I think that's
yeah. Let's
news.
Do it.
Also, wait, Hawaii. Aloha to the Hawaii.
Ooh,
Bowl.
Yes.
Playing La Tech.
The throwback to the old WAC days.
Yeah, this is the eighth time to play in the Hawaii Bowl, 11th bowl game overall. So. Bulldogs, Warriors, that should be – La Tech's not too bad. They stumbled down the stretch, but they started 6-2. Pretty good team.
Well, they've got some pretty nice individual talents that are going to – you know, they're getting a lot of NFL helium. So we'll talk more about that in the weeks to come.
Yeah, a couple guys. Receiver-quarterback combo is pretty good. So, all right, so let's get to this game here. Let's backtrack a tiny bit.
Okay. How,
did you watch – you told me you did not watch much of the first half of San Jose State, Fresno State.
No, I was out –
You're blessed.
In San Clemente, which, you know, if you were there last weekend, you would not blame me at all.
No kidding.
I came back with about 3 minutes left in the first half and noticed it was still scoreless.
You're like, what? Huh?
I mean, I wasn't expecting them to go all Utah State on the Spartans because that's not really Fresno State's style, but I was still thinking, you know, what is going on?
You're thinking Tedford's really put in the new guys to get that four-game role to get some talent in there to play.
Mm-hmm.
But this game, I watched the first half, and maybe it's just, who knows, they weren't interested. It was senior night, but you're playing San Jose State, who hasn't been all that great. San Jose State, they decided to say, we're going to let Marcus McMarion beat you in the throwing game, and he did mm-hmm. not in the first half. They were only rushing three guys, but yet still getting pressure. This wasn't like a covered sack where he just couldn't find a guy open because it's 8-on-4, essentially, mm-hmm. defenders versus receivers. They were still getting pressure all day in the first half against him. And so he's overthrowing passes, getting hit, getting sacked, getting pressured, getting hurried. They weren't running the ball despite doing a three-man rush, which you say, okay, yes, we'll run the ball with three guys with Mims and Hoken back there. Why not, right?
Yeah.
But third quarter, the first two drives, precision, whatever was said, they were great. So I don't know how much concern that is too, but the first half, like, if Boise rushes only three, their three are better than San Jose State's three for the most part.
I mean, I really don't think that's going to happen. I don't think Boise's just going to be content to sit back and let things happen. No. I think they're going to probably bring more pressure.
They are. That's just watch the game. It's like, I don't want to take too much of it because it's one game and one half of a game, but it was just kind of odd to see, like, they couldn't get things done. So yeah. So 1 to 10, from what I've told you of what you've said in that first half, are you concerned at all going into this week?
No, because, I mean, they also played the second half.
That's true. There are two halves of football.
And the second half was a lot closer to kind of what I expected, where the defense stepped up, made big plays. You know, Aaron Mosby had the big pick six for 95 yards and a touchdown.
That's right.
McMarion was throwing darts in the second half. So, I mean, it all turned out fine. Yeah, so I'm not really concerned about
defense
that.
Defense was fine. Defense was great. The offense was concerning. So this game, maybe we should mention, Matt, it's not a late kickoff. It's a 4:45 Pacific, 5:45 Mountain Time on regular old ESPN. And I did complain about the time slot earlier when the game was announced, like about 2 months ago. I'm not concerned anymore. You know why?
Because Clemson is playing Pitt at the exact same time.
And Northwestern is playing Ohio State basically at the exact same time.
Yeah. So who cares, right?
Yeah, because Pittsburgh's going to lose by 30 points, and Northwestern might make it fun for a quarter. And the SEC game is, well, who knows? CBS likes to burn those commercials into the ground. They like an extra 20 seconds per spot, I believe. 15 seconds per spot. So there's a chance that game might bleed over a tiny bit. But get to this is going to be the game. Okay, we're going to sound homerish. Outside of Texas, Oklahoma, this is probably the number two game. Because I expect Alabama probably to steamroll Georgia.
I think a lot of that standing is going to depend on what happens in the Memphis-UCF game.
Yeah.
That kicks off earlier in the afternoon.
Yeah, well, let's bring that up really quick. So that's a... not a 10 a.m. Mountain Time kick, so Matt, they got some. It's not morning football for us.
Mm-mm.
It's a nice 3:30 kick Eastern Time, 12:30 out west. Memphis at UCF. This game opened as a 7-point favorite for. This line's not right, but 7-point for Memphis, or excuse me, UCF went down to 3 for UCF, which with Kinsey gone, that makes a lot of sense. Here's what we need to happen this game if we want the night game to have even more intrigue: Memphis to clearly win.
Yes.
And they played last year, right, in the title game. Is this a rematch?
It is. I believe, if I remember correctly, it was 62-52 in the championship game last year.
A lot of points. And with Milton McKenzie out of this game, it's going to be a lot different because UCF's defense isn't very good. And we don't know much about their new quarterback. He didn't do much last week versus USF because he already had a lead. He didn't throw very well. They just kind of ran the ball a bit. But I'm looking real quick. Team ranking and number of fire super quick before we get back to our game. UCF 34-30 team ranking, number fire 41-30 for UCF.
Interesting.
Do you have what S&P is up in front of you? Do you have their?
I do. They have
profile?
It at UCF 38, Memphis 28.
I don't know. That'll be interesting.
I mean, I don't know how much that accounts for Milton's absence, though, because it's predictive based on what they've done to this point, and what they've done to this point has been dependent in no small part to the quarterback who's not going to be playing in this game.
Yeah, and Memphis has won 4 in a row. They're averaging about 50 points a game just about the past couple weeks. They did get blasted by Missouri. And remember, they only lost UCF by 1 point.
Mm-hmm. And they basically gave that game away.
Yeah, and weren't they lead? Yeah, they're up 17-7 at 1 point in the first half. Weren't they also up a bit higher? They're up by 10 points.
Yeah, and then they blew their opportunity to kick a game-winning field goal with really bad time management down the stretch.
So we'll see. So if that happens, if Memphis wins, then the winner of our game will probably go to the Fiesta Bowl. And would you like to see Fresno State LSU, Matt? Does that excite you? Boise State LSU?
I think I can speak for every Fresno State fan that it would not matter who they are playing. It will be a big deal if this happens.
You know, it'd be great, but it won't happen because the way both Titans are, Texas versus whoever. Because Sugar Bowl is just like the Rose Bowl. They're blatantly crappy, where it has to be Big 12 SEC.
Yeah.
So let's get to our game here. Boise State, Fresno State. 22-ranked Boise State, 25th-ranked Fresno State. Boise State is a slim 2.5-point favorite. This is the fourth time they've played in
372 days.
Not 700 days. I'm like, what am I talking about? It's like 2 years. Basically four times in a year, in one calendar year.
A year and a week, basically.
A year and a week. A home team has won every game. man, these advanced numbers here, spicy. We'll get to those later because you're going to like these, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your – we did our all-conference stuff. We did our player of the year, defensive player of the year. So we did address Jeffrey Allison. Did we miss on that, or is that just kind of – what's the deal with that?
See, that's the thing. It's people tend to frame the conversation about all-conference picks as like an all-or-nothing kind of thing. And really, at a lot of positions – there really are no wrong answers. You know, if they had, for instance, was thinking about quarterbacks, you could make a pretty convincing argument for Brett Rypien, who did end up as first team and offensive player of the year. But I also think you could make a pretty convincing argument for either Jordan Love or Marcus McMarion.
Or, if you really want to, Cole McDonald, just based on pure numbers.
That's true. And so, you know, people like to point and say, like, y'all got it wrong. But I mean, I don't know.
It's not a Vandross situation.
I almost feel like first team, second team really does a disservice because so many people are having really good years that, you know, it's not really a denigration as much as it is just, you know, the breaks of how the vote shook out. I don't think it's meant to be any disrespect to say that, like, at least seven linebackers had sensational years. And the example I threw out there was Logan Wilson. You know, we had six linebackers on our two deep. He wasn't one of them.
And he's really, really good.
That's a guy who had over 100 tackles. He, I believe, had two forced fumbles and two interceptions, if I'm not mistaken. I don't have his numbers in front of me.
Sounds like him, yeah.
But it was basically a typical Logan Wilson year.
Which is really good and awesome.
And he just got overshadowed by guys who had similarly great years. And so, as far as I know, I haven't heard any Wyoming fans complaining about that particular oversight.
A little bit. There's a couple that – more people, I guess, were Andrew Wingard.
That's – you know what? That actually surprised me a little bit.
Because he made first team.
He did.
I think it was an – oh, I think it was our picks. Seen, that was our picks. Yeah. That's what it was, yeah.
Yeah, I had seen beforehand that, you know, his numbers weren't quite up to par from where they had been in the past couple of years. So it did surprise me a little bit that when I was – calculating our votes as a group, he coalesced a lot more support than I think I would have expected.
But that, you know, it's good. Like, who did you vote for player of the year? Because I guess nobody voted for Jeffrey Allison in our group of a dozen guys.
Who did I vote for? I don't have that in front of me.
I voted for Tizanio for San Diego State. He was like top seven in every major defensive category for like that tackles, like TFL, sacks. I put him because of just he's all over the field. He's making every play possible. And I put Allison's number two team. I don't know. It's like it's not like Van Der Esch where we pretty much whiplashed. That's pretty bad. But it's not like here's the thing. Like was Allison like you watch Fresno a lot? Was he? He's we know he's really really good. Is it them? Was it maybe the league or whoever saying okay they're probably the best defense. He's the best player in the defensive team. Is that what they did? Maybe.
I mean, I don't know.
He's good. It's hard.
You could see the San Diego State fans complaining that Kaiva Tizino didn't get a lot of respect. And I think that I would tend to agree with them because he had a really good year, too. You know, we tabbed David Woodward, for instance, as our midseason player of the year. Mm-hmm. And then he didn't really do anything in the last month and a half to make us regret that. You know, he ended up having a really good year. It's like the numbers on all of these guys are so close to one another that it's really hard to be mad one way or the other when one person inevitably has to emerge. So
my one surprise, I guess, is Malik Reed. Because I think I put him on my second. He made first team for ours and the guys who cover the team each.
Oh, by the way, I did vote for Malik Reed for defensive player of the year.
Okay. And there's the thing is, there's a lot of good players. Like, I get it. He changed positions. It's just splitting hairs. Like, look at the second team. Like, I put we'll get to everything in a minute, but who is a Colorado State linebacker? Like 100. He basically did what Frank Ginda did last year.
Josh Watson.
Yeah, like 130 tackles. I'm like,
yep.
I don't even think I put Carl Granderson in my first two team because how good. It's crazy. There's defense in this league and people don't. I don't know. It's just get over yourself. I'm sorry, but it's so.
Well,
close.
No, I'm not going to say that.
Well, just, I mean, you know, like,
I think
it's tough.
I think
that's
it just
I mean.
Requires a reframing of how we think about these things because there's so many good players. Really not a disrespect to say that one is that much better than the other, even though the entire system is set to it's set up to make us think that.
Yeah, and that, I don't mean to really be rude about it, but it's like it's an award. It's great. Your team's in a title game. Like, who cares if we picked him or not, if they go on to go to the Fiesta Bowl and win. You know what I mean? Or even if they lose this weekend and go to the New Mexico Bowl and beat up on some Conference USA team.
Yeah, like, I mean, nobody's getting a bonus because of how we voted.
I don't know. Does Randy Etzel get a bonus? He gets some odd bonuses out there. Does any connect back to us?
Brian Harsin did not get a bonus for getting votes from us for Coach of the Year or something like that.
It is. It's just very tough. It's like there's so many good players on here in defense. It's like, I don't know, like whatever. It happened. It's what it is. And I don't think we missed. It's like, and also people who are looking at this, well, my guy, they're a Fresno guy. We watch enough of every team to know. Yes, I don't look at every team every week, every game, but I look at who they, like how they played, and it's a big deal. And they're all great. It's like, we know he's really good. And so there's other guys who just happen to have better teams. And who cares if they play in Hawaii, where their team is okay, or San Jose State, where their team's not very good. Didn't we have three San Jose State players on our first team?
We did.
So it's like, you could be on a team that's not good and still overachieve and be amazing. Like, wait, what, Josh Oliver, Boogie Roberts, and
Dakari Monroe,
who's really good secondary. And so whatever, it's fine. We know what we're doing, and our list isn't that much different if you look at everybody else's.
Next year we should just do like an honor roll kind of thing and just come up with a list of 50 people.
We already do
that. Like, these are the 50. We should just do a postseason top 50 or something and just not number it at all and just say, these are the 50 best players in the conference. Deal with it.
But no order, just for the heck of
no it. No order at all. And that way we don't have to have this conversation.
Nah, but when people complain and fight, they come visit our stuff.
Yeah.
Whatever. I don't care too much. I just wanted to just say, hey, there's a lot of good defenders. So let's get back to the game. All right, more game stuff, because we could meander because we'll have one game to preview, but yet we're still at 30 minutes, which is fine, right?
Yeah.
Nobody cares. All right, so we did – I'm going to ask you this, and I'm going to pull up mine as well. Did you fill out the position edges yesterday or today?
I did.
So we'll go through that really quick because we're going to have a post on that. We have a roundtable questions we're going to put up Thursday. Prediction, and that includes people who cover the team and not, predictions as well, all sorts of stuff. So let's start with this. Who has the quarterback edge?
I think it's Fresno State.
Ooh.
So you know how we were talking about how I just voted for Malik Reed for the Defensive Player of the Year?
Mm-hmm.
I did not vote for Brett Rypien for Offensive Player of the Year.
Who did you vote for?
And I also, well, I voted for Preston Williams.
Okay.
And I also did not vote for Brett Rypien as a first team all conference pick.
Man, hey, Boise, it's showing bias. You should be about, last night's podcast, man.
see, here's the thing.
I'm kidding.
All right. I'm just going to tell everybody if you're a Boise State fan and you're swerving your car off the road,
relax,
outraged, just go look at the numbers. See, because I'm going to show you that on the one hand, you know,
paint a story for us.
Marcus McMarion has a better completion rate than Brett Rypien.
70%. That's ridiculous.
And that doesn't matter whether you slice it by the entire season or if you just whittle it down to conference play. He has an advantage either way. And just maybe to simplify things and focus more on common opponents and things like that, I'm just going to talk in terms of how they've done in conference play, right? So McMarion has the edge in completion rate, 69.7 to 68. He's thrown slightly fewer attempts, about 25 altogether. He also has averaged more yards per attempt. He has a better touchdown to interception ratio, and his passer rating is surpassed only by Jordan Love. So I really don't see why it's that much of a controversy to say that McMarion gives Bulldogs an edge.
You know what?
I'm not saying it's a big edge.
You know
I'm
what?
Saying that of all the unit matchups that we're going to talk about in this podcast, that it's probably the slightest edge, but it is an advantage nonetheless.
You know what it might be? Because not just because it's Boise State and people do, we know, pay a bit more attention. They played the past couple weeks to end the season. They beat Utah State, beat Fresno State, all these ranked teams. So maybe there's more momentum. Like, hey, they keep winning. And he's during those games, Trumbull appears, he's been fine. But I'm wondering if that could be it. Like, you beat Utah State, you beat Fresno, you're beating their toughest schedule was the last couple weeks of the season.
Okay, so then let's whittle it down even further. Mm-hmm. If we're just going by the last four games that these quarterbacks played, so basically the month of November.
Okay, we could do that. November stats. Organized.
They're dead even. Okay, so actually, let me step back further. They had the exact same amount of attempts in November, 123 passes.
That's crazy.
They have the exact same completion rate, 70.7%. McMarion is still averaging over a yard more per attempt. and he has one fewer interception.
6-1, 6-2.
Yeah. I'm not saying it's a big edge, but I'm saying it's a slight edge. What I'm saying overall is that McMarion, at least from my point of view, is not going to be the reason that the Bulldogs win. I mean, he's not going to be the reason they lose this game if they lose this game. Mm-hmm. And there are other factors which we're going to talk about that are, from my point of view, are going to play a larger role in how this game unfolds.
I should make, after this, I should change my pick. I pick Brett Rippon.
No. You already cast your die. You can't change now.
No. I'm just saying, after hearing your arguments, convincing. But here's one thing I'd like to point out. Like last year, remember, McMarion came during like fall camp, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
I believe I'm correct on this. I have to look exactly at the numbers, but I even said way back in, probably even during that preview last year recap, or maybe our January stupid first look, that this offense will be percentage-wise, probably Utah State may surpass it because they just went nuts, and probably maybe why, but the difference, not total-wise, but like percentage-wise or ratio-wise, was probably the biggest jump, and I'm pretty confident saying they're one of the top three outside of those two teams, because nobody in the world thought Hawaii or Utah State would do what they did or even come close to it. And so we saw last year, like, he wasn't throwing the ball a ton last year, because when you come midseason, how much are they going to change and do, you know what I mean? It's just different last year to this year. He's had a full spring, he's had plenty of time. Because last year, he was, look at last year's total numbers. He's 8% percentage points better completion. He only had 14 touchdowns last year. That's it, including the bowl game.
And if you compare what he did in conference play last year versus this year, by the end of the conference championship game, he'll have thrown more passes. He actually threw 253 times in conference play last year, which kind of surprises me, but as you alluded to, all of those numbers, completion rate, yards per attempt, touchdown to interception ratio, all of those things have improved. And from where I'm standing, it basically just comes down to the fact that McMarion does not make mistakes.
No.
And you don't have to go that far to see what I'm talking about. We haven't seen McMarion make the kind of throw that Brett Rippon did when he threw the interception to Juju Hughes in the first matchup.
Mm-hmm.
That cost them a scoring opportunity. So, and this is not to say that Boise State is not going to find a way to challenge him, but I would be very surprised if he makes the same kind of mistake that he did in last year's championship game. Because if you recall, that was basically his worst throw of the year. He was off balance and right to, I think it was, what was it, Van Der Esch?
Yep, he got the game sealing touchdown when they're near the red zone.
Yeah.
Or interception, pick.
So basically, he hasn't made that kind of throw all season long.
Three picks all year. That's it. And
two of them were like tip drills that weren't really his fault at all.
And we need to bring up, or do you have one more thought to say on this?
No, I'm just going to say, you know, that to me is where most of the advantage lies, is that we've seen Brett Rippon be erratic here and there, which is not to say that he will be in this game.
That's what I was going to say. Like, he
only that we've seen that possibility more often than we've seen it with McMarion.
As recent, since he's a freshman, we've called good Brett Rippon, bad Brett Rippon.
And it's not like I'm talking out of hand either, because in the article that we're going to post either later today or tomorrow, we asked our staff this, and it was 6-4 in favor of Boise State. So it's not like the difference between the two is that distinct.
Yeah. And then, like, Nevada, 3 picks. He's had BYU pick, Fresno, like 29-7. Like, he's really good, but McMarion's been more steady. I guess if I were to make the case for Brett Rippon, is because he, when he's good, he's, I don't know, when he's at his best, who's better, you think? Should I go, because look what Rippon did last time, 24-29, 83%, it's almost not over 9 yards a carry, or excuse me, not carry, attempt.
I mean, when they're at their best, I guess in that case I would give the edge to Rippon.
Maybe that's what's going on.
We've seen him make plays in the clutch pretty much all year long.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it was against the Bulldogs, whether it was against Air Force, for instance, where they needed every bit of his production to win that game.
5 TDs.
Or, you know, in the second half against Nevada. So I guess if we're talking like peak quarterback, then the edge would probably go to Rippon. But overall, I would give it to McMarion.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. That's probably my thing. Like, if they're at their best, I'd probably go. And even though I chose it fairly quickly, it's not like it was an easy choice.
And the other thing, thing to keep in mind too, which maybe is a nice segue towards talking about some of these other advantages that we talked about. Mm-hmm. McMarion's had to do this without the benefit of a real steady. Well, I don't want to say an unsteady running game, But it's a running game that has been more like workmanlike per se, because they've found ways to get the running backs and the tight ends and everything into space to create plays through the passing game in a way that Boise State has not. But I'm in agreement with pretty much everybody who voted in terms of how the running games stack up. It's pretty clear that the Broncos have an advantage there, especially with the way that Alexander Mattison has been playing lately.
Yeah, the past couple weeks. And so I went with Boise as well. I guess one advantage, if I'm looking for an edge, is that you remember last year's title game where Mattison went out with that ankle injury? They brought, and I discussed this on the other show we did. Backup comes in extremely healthy, pretty good. So what the edge could be is that, yeah, Madison's really good, great. Not that he gets hurt, that's all I'm saying, but just 30 carries, whatever he may get, he may not be able to keep that energy up throughout the whole game. And where Boise can go back and forth, back and forth, they might have more juice in the tank late in the game, and they need to either, say, run the clock out if they're ahead by mixing those guys up, getting the key first down, or when it's third and short, maybe fourth and short, they go for it. They're not using the same guy over and over and over. They're going back and forth. So that's
so you're thinking that maybe Andrew Van Buren is playing this game?
Well, not necessarily, but the two main guys who run the ball, I'm just saying they're going to be more fresh than one Madison. Potential. That's like, if I'm looking for an edge, maybe the third guy gets in for a few carries to spell them occasionally. But what I'm getting at is, like, if it's late in the game, guys are tired, guys are, even though they're, you know what I mean, they're ready for this game. It's not going to be, oh, I'm tired, I can't play, coach. But a guy's more fresh. If you have 12 carries compared to Madison to 20, that's just, they're splitting hairs almost for, I know, to get Fresno even closer to Madison. Because Madison is elite. Look what he did second half last couple weeks ago. But if they're going to run two guys, I'm just saying, one guy, they might be a little more fresh.
I mean, maybe, but I mean, look at, and you can even go farther back, you know, thinking in terms of what he's done in November. Do you realize that Madison has more carries than anybody in the month of November?
Does not surprise me.
In the FBS ranks.
Oh, FBS, no.
Nationally. He is number one. But more than that, the number that stands out to me is the fact that he's averaging over 5 yards per carry now. And that is a credit not only to him and his willingness to take on that kind of tip of the spearhead kind of role. That's credit to the offensive line too, which we saw in this first matchup that ended up being a very significant advantage too for the Broncos. The Bulldogs were not able to get a lot of push up front in the first matchup. And if there's one thing I'm concerned about, it's the fact that when you look back at what the Bulldogs have done over conference play, they are next to last in tackles for loss. And while on a per play basis, like the run defense has been fine, you know, it's about 3.5 yards per carry on the season and about 3.65 in conference play, but that's a dangerous game to play. And yeah, we saw that Boise State basically blew that up the first time around, because I went back and watched this game, and I went back and I looked at the overall box score. And we know that Madison ran for 144 yards. His longest run was only 14 yards, though. But you know what the difference was?
That kept riding, right? Second half, could give him the ball.
It was that they didn't get enough havoc up front.
Yeah.
Most of the havoc that was created was through the secondary. And Madison ended up with a success rate, which is, you know, 50% of yards on first down, 70% on second, 100% on third or fourth. He had a success rate of 60%. And he had an opportunity rate of 60% too. So he was getting to the second level more often than not against the Bulldogs defense. And Brett Rypien, who, even though he isn't necessarily known as a runner per se, let's not forget that he had a hand in Boise State picking up some crucial first downs too. You know, he had a success rate of 57%. So they were able to move the ball at will on the ground against this defense. And so one of the things that I'm looking forward to seeing is how the Bulldogs answer that, because they have put a couple of new guys in the starting lineup in the last couple of weeks. Replaced Jashad Haynes and Kevin Atkins, who I think Haynes at least is still struggling with injury a little bit. But they put Patrick Bellany and Kaidi Iacopo in the starting lineup the last 2 weeks. And if you look back at what this team has done on the ground, they gave up less than 3 yards per carry to San Diego State, and then they did it again last week against the Spartans. And so those two guys up front, while still unproven, I would give the advantage to Boise State along that line too, on the defensive line, but those two guys are going to play a huge role if the Bulldogs are able to turn this game around on the Broncos.
I'd say one quick thing too. Receiving, it's Madison has more receptions, but the two backs for Fresno State, when you look at like receptions, like Ronnie Rivers has 21, and then not Jordan, sorry, it's receiver. I had an organizer a moment ago.
Jordan Mims and Ronnie Rivers both have 21 catches apiece, and so they're both averaging over 13 yards a catch.
Yeah, but then again, yeah, Madison gets 27 on the air, and so it's like, okay, well, what are you going to do? But he's also only getting 6 yards a reception, I should say.
So that's what I'm saying. They've just found different ways to incorporate the running backs into this offense that has made it a more pass-first friendly attack.
It's true. I mentioned, yeah, we'll just kind of roll into kind of everything else here. I thought one of Fresno's keys to win is that they have the running game. That's good. Keyshawn Johnson, amazing. I think the big difference could be Rice at tight end.
Absolutely.
Because if they get the running game involved, whether it's short passing. No, I even mentioned passing yesterday. Like, here's the thing. You have the three levels. Like, Keyshawn can go downfield to get great plays. We have Jared Rice maybe over the middle, stuff like that. And then the running backs get those shorter receptions. There's three areas of the field that Boise State has to accompany for, which they have the defenders to do it. But it's not like they could, okay, we're going to focus on Keyshawn and the running game, or we're just going to focus on Rice and the short passing game from the running backs. And who cares if they go deep down the field? They're not going to get that. If they're on their game, they have to keep track of each spot. So everybody clean sweep for tight end, which not it's partly because Boise doesn't use the tight end as much this year. But then again, the tight end for Fresno is far, far and away above. So I think it's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, and that was one of the more subtle turning points in the first matchup was I remember there was at least one drop that Jared Rice had, and I think it was either in the second or the third quarter, but it would have been for a first down, and I think that was an instance where Fresno State didn't end up moving the ball that much on that drive. And so I think you're absolutely right, because in the first matchup, he ended up with six targets, which was third on the team, but he only had three catches. And if he can improve that just a little bit, you know, we saw him be a difference maker in last year's championship game.
True, yeah. Is that going to happen again?
I think if it does, that's going to improve Fresno's chances dramatically.
So, okay. I spaced out for half a second. I'm like, wait a minute. I apologize. Let's do this. We kind of mentioned offense line a little bit. What was your edge? Like, real quick, who was your edge? Was it? It's pretty split down the middle here. It's 1, 2, 3, 4. It's Boise by hair.
I guess I'm a little surprised that it was so close, because I thought Boise State had a clear advantage on the offensive line. And that, to me, goes back to what I was talking about earlier as far as Madison's improved performance down the stretch. For as good as he has been, that's not only a credit to him, that's a credit to the guys that they put on the offensive line. And John Ojukwu and the other guy's name escapes me. I'm pretty sure Roger or someone is yelling it at their stereo right now. But the guys that they have put into the starting lineup have made a tremendous difference. And we saw it in the first matchup against Fresno State that the Bulldogs were not able to really get any pressure on Rippon at all. Like, they had one sack, but more often than not, he was able to stand back and have a lot of time to throw. And to really take advantage of what I consider to be another of their strengths, it was that wide receiver. So, I mean, it's kind of a chess match. I see it where I feel like I talk about things now that I was talking about a month ago when I was thinking about the first game, because I think a lot of those things are still true. You know, if Fresno State's disadvantage on the defensive line can't get to Rippon and can't slow down Alexander Madison, eventually that's going to come back to bite them.
So, well, I think the reason the difference would be, as kind of goes through some numbers, because Boise allows a decent amount of sacks. Maybe that's why their offensive line, they allow 30 sacks so far. Fresno only 10.
I think they've been a little better down the stretch about that, though.
Yeah, just kind of looking overall, I was kind of curious, because they've been in, well, actually, not really. They've actually, in conference play, 20 sacks compared to 10 overall in non-conference play. So, that's my one area. That's why I chose Fresno over, because that was my reasoning right there. Because sacks allowed is like, come on, they get to Rippon. Like, also, we've seen when Rippon struggles, it's because he's getting hit and sacked and pressured. And so,
Well, and that, but that also goes back to another strength that I don't know if it comes down to a position you group necessarily. Brett Rypien has still been really good on passing downs.
Yeah, that's the third down
And
thing, yeah.
yeah, and so, and that was one of the things that really made the difference in the first matchup was that McMarion was only 7 of 15 for 95 yards. Rypien was 5 of 7. And so they were putting him in positions to succeed where he didn't really need to make that many plays. But even when he did, he was making them more often than not. And that was something that we saw last week against the Utah State Aggies, too. You go back and look at the stat sheet for that game. On those same passing downs, he was 12 of 15 for 162 yards. He was basically aces when they needed him to make plays the most. And that has been one of the big stories of the season because if you go look at just passing downs S&P plus, they're still 10th in the country. And for as good as Fresno State's secondary has been defending on passing downs, because on defense, the Bulldogs are 6th in that same metric, we saw Boise State win that particular kind of situational football the first time around. And if they do it again, that's going to put the Bulldogs on their back foot.
All right then. Let's go to defense, I guess. We just gonna be long, so we gotta kind of hustle along here a little bit.
Okay.
We don't want it too long, even though we could. So, anything else on? Oh, I guess receivers, right? Here's what was pointed out yesterday in our other show we did. I voted for Fresno State because they have the best receiver by far, and Keyshawn Johnson may be the best player in the field, possibly, maybe. But our thinking or mine was Fresno's number one, but the depth might favor Boise State a
It
little
definitely
bit.
favors Boise State.
So, what do you think like Boise's defense needs to do? Just keep, because like I mentioned, if they get Rice going, if they get their short passing game going, can they afford to have a guy shadow or put maybe even Tyler Horton the whole game on Keyshawn Johnson, take him out and make anybody else beat them? Is that worth it to do for Boise State? Like, where can they afford to put their best defender and maybe another guy nearby and open other things up?
I mean, I think they can because that's kind of one of the biggest reasons they beat Fresno State the first time around was that they were able to put a lot of pressure on McMarion. And to me, that speaks to the advantage that Boise State has in their pass rush. They're basically number one in the Mountain West as far as total sacks, whether you look at the entire season, whether you look at conference play. We just recently crowned Curtis Weaver as the Defensive Player of the Year. And even though I didn't vote for him personally, I don't have a problem with that because he was very good down the stretch. And if he can get in there and terrorize the Bulldogs again, he and Jabril Frazier are two more guys that are going to have a huge impact on this game one way or the other. Because if Fresno State can do a better job of protecting, that's going to give them an edge. But if they fall prey to the same kind of breakdowns that they had the first time around, that's going to give Boise State an advantage.
All right, so let's go to full on defense then. So it
Okay.
depends, because you're right, because they boy, I just well, let me ask you this: if Keyshawn doesn't have a big game, who would be that second receiver that's not Rice? Who is
I
their number
mean,
two wideout that would say, "This guy's going to make plays because he's done it throughout the year"?
well, it's got to be Jameer Jordan.
Okay.
And that was something that in the article that I think you were posting sometime tomorrow, Friday. That was his presence was a big difference maker when they won in Fresno last year. He had four catches, 91 yards, excuse me, and including the big kind of diving catch down the sideline that energized the Bulldogs in that game. But in last year's championship, he was basically a non-factor. And in the game a few weeks ago, he didn't really get many looks at all. Like he wasn't even among the top five as far as targets. So I think if they can find ways to get him into space and take advantage of his speed, that was something that we haven't really seen in the last two matchups between these two teams. So I guess if there's like a kind of a hidden X factor per se, I think it's Jordan.
Okay. All right. Let's go to defense. And that, I was just curious because Rice is their number two guy. He has three, and then Jordan has what, three touchdowns on 25 catches. So,
Yeah, but he's also leading the team with 16.1 yards per catch, and that's why he's a difference maker.
that's right. Go downfield, play action, get the running game going over the top. Boom, touchdown. Hopefully, right? All
Hopefully, that's the idea.
right. So we got a defense. This might be a bit quicker. Defensive line's almost as Boise got a slight edge, partly because where do you put Curtis Weaver? Is he a lineman or linebacker? I was kind of joking. Like, what? How does that configure into your ranking of who's better in linebacker or defensive line?
I always considered the stud position to be like a defensive end position, but I guess it could go either way.
It's, I don't know. Whatever, regardless, him.
Because when you look at the depth chart, it goes defensive end, nose tackle, defensive tackle, stud.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. Maybe it doesn't make a huge difference.
It's probably just where they put the strong guy. But defensive line favors Boise by a bit. And like I said, it's like if it's Frazier, if it's Weaver, if it's whoever's in there, there's going to be guys making plays. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know. Where did you fall in online on this one?
Well, I thought that Boise had a pretty substantial edge.
Me too.
On the defensive line, not only because of Weaver and Jabril Frazier, but the other guys, I think, are finally starting to get healthy. You know, like Sonatane Louie, I believe, is expected back.
Yeah,
he's going to play a big role in this game. You know, Chase Atata, I think he's 100%. Durant Miles, I'm pretty sure, is 100%. So if those guys are game to play, I wouldn't be surprised if they're able to do what they did in the first matchup, which was basically shut down the running game and force McMarion to make plays.
And also, I know they had some injuries. These guys have been playing more because they've had, like, David Moe is out. They have a few other guys out. I'm trying to whoever, him and others. They're actually getting out.
They're actually very – I've seen a lot of Boise State fans very high on – I feel like I'm going to pull a U right now. Skelly Gahan.
Sounds good to me.
True freshman, 6'2", 300 pounds.
There you go.
He's a guy that I'm pretty sure this might be the first time we've mentioned him on the podcast all season long.
I'd agree.
But if he's in that rotation and he's disruptive up front, that is going to be something that Fresno's going to have to account for.
I think, not to go back to offensive line back and forth, but remember last year, wasn't a Fresno-Boise game in Boise the first time McMarion was sacked more than once?
I'm pretty sure, yeah. And they sacked him twice.
Yeah, at least two times. Maybe three, I think, at two. But this will come back to the same strength for strength kind of. Fresno's only allowed 10 sacks all year. And so that's something where, yeah, the Boise line is great, but it's going up against a really good offensive line as well. And so, but we saw last time when they got pressure, they were not necessarily sacks, but stopping the running game. And so.
Well, they gave up 10 sacks all season. Three of them were to Boise State.
Oh, there were. I must have been spaced on something else. Never mind. They did get to him. I was thinking Utah State game. Never mind. That's a bit different for Boise, Utah State. So. They got some improvement there. Whatever. My point's mute because I got the wrong game mixed up with sacks. Too many games. Too many teams, Matt. But you're right. But Fresno has some – they can make some plays. They're not like, oh, whatever, we're not the better line. But they got to do better than last time because do you want Madison to get 5, 6, 7 yards of carry against you? They can't let that happen again. They need to do something else to get in and say – not say, but do it and, like, stop the running game. Don't let Madison bully you around. Let him just push you around. Because look how strong he is. Taking guys with him to get those extra yardage, and so it's him, and we'll see. It's fine, but do you think this is the most significant edge maybe that Boise has?
I think so, because that has been kind of one of the biggest differences in the last two matchups.
Okay. No, that makes complete sense. All right, he's a good linebacker. Also very close to this one, because I thought it's close, but apparently not our voters. Everybody put Fresno but one.
No, I mean that's fine by me. I have Fresno with an edge too.
Well, they apparently do have the defensive player of the year.
Yeah, that doesn't hurt, right?
No, but like him, Frazier versus Allison. This what do you? I think that maybe if they're afraid of the running, not afraid, but concerned running game could be as well. These guys need to make more plays a little bit. Like if it starts getting where the running game gets going, it could be a double-edged sword. Bring a guy up, do a run blitz. But if they start doing that, that's when the play action can get you to somebody across the middle. Like we see, I'm not sure if Hightower is going to play for Boise State, John Hightower, this week. I don't recall. But he's a guy that can get those quick passes and score DP at 3 versus New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't all like deep, long passes. And so that is something where this linebacker group's so good. Get to the quarterback. Do what Malik Reed did. Do what San Diego State did. Do what Oklahoma State did. Just knock ripping around if they're going to win. That's what I think the big grudge, because not to go back to quarterback, but get to rip in. It's simple. Any quarterback that happens, but he, if they get to him and hit him and knock him around, he'll make throws. Sometimes he won't make throws. And so I think that linebacker group probably, like I mentioned, focus helped running game. Maybe their more important job is to sack Rippin.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't want to dismiss Boise State's linebackers out of hand.
No, they're good. Jabril Frazier's really good. Come on.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Not only Frazier, but you know, Tyson Maeve has been solid in the middle. And Ezekiel Noah has very quietly played pretty well down the stretch. You know, 3.5 tackles for loss, you know, only a half sack, but he had 4 run stuffs. And on plays that he's in, you know, opponents are only averaging about 4 yards per play. So if he can step up and be, you know, a run stopper, kind of like in the way that he was a few weeks ago and the way that he's been down the stretch, that's going to be a huge asset. So I think that I would favor Fresno State just because of their, you know, they haven't had the same kind of injury issues. They've been playing together all year long and they've been very productive. But I don't want to undersell what Boise State's been able to do in these last few weeks, breaking in new guys who are pretty good themselves.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. It's, man. All right, so let's go to the secondary really quick. I would say this is kind of like the opposite of the Fresno receiving group compared to the other team. Because Tyler Horton, yeah, missed a couple games. His overall numbers aren't eye-popping, but he has 3 defensive touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to say that's a game, what's going to happen, why they'll win, even though I sometimes am somehow good at predicting special teams shenanigans that go my way in picking some of these. But the edge is close. Oh, I didn't even do the math here because Fresno has like Juju Hughes. They have Allen back there. No, not yeah, right.
Are you talking about Mike Bell?
I don't know where Allen came. They have Tank too, right?
And Thula Kelly, yeah.
There we go. They have everybody back there. I'm mixing everybody up today. What's new, right? Come on. They have a very good secondary. The depth for Fresno is much better than depth for Boise State. Does that sound correct?
Yes.
But Horton, pick 6, fumble recovery, strip the ball. That could be a game maker.
See, here's the thing, though. I think that the Bulldogs have an edge in the secondary, but that's not going to matter if, as in the first matchup, they can't get pressure up front. And sure. And that is a credit not only to Rippon, but to the receivers, where they made plays down the stretch in this first matchup a few weeks ago. You know, A.J. Richardson had a big catch. Sean Monster had a couple big catches. And Khalil Shakir was... he was the one that ended up scoring the game-winning touchdown. Mm-hmm. So all of their playmakers were able to contribute in some way, and that's no disrespect to the way that the secondary is played. They just, you know, they can only do so much for so long. And I think that, you know, I don't think it's necessarily unfair to say that aside from Horton, you know, Boise State's, yeah, they've been okay in the secondary.
That's completely fair. Like,
I mean, just look at the difference in havoc rate, for instance, in percentage of TFLs, pass defense, forced fumbles, stuff like that. Boise State on the season is 106th. Fresno State is 13th.
There you go. That's the difference. Game over.
But that's entirely going to depend on what the players up front can do.
Yeah, give quarterback time, it's like he's going to find he's going to find Monster, he's going to find whoever's downfield. Maybe Madison gets a screen and goes off because he's the guy who breaks away after, you know what I mean? Like, stuff could happen if you don't give plays breakdown too. Like you said, like, if they get pressure, if they don't get pressure and Rippon hangs out 3, 4, 5, 6 seconds, coverage will eventually break down. Somebody's going to be open, especially if it's not a three-man rush, but say it's just a typical 4 or 5 guy going after the quarterback. And it's fairly even in that secondary. It's like, 6-on-4, 5-on-4. And somebody slips out, makes a cut, improvises because they realize the play shouldn't be taking 10 seconds to get open. Mm-hmm. And that's where crazy stuff can happen. So you got to do both, right? You got to get to the quarterback and try to still cover your guy. But we'll see, man. That's all I can say, right? We will see.
Yeah,
but that's a key point in the game.
Yeah.
Special teams. Do you care? Yes, we should care very much, right?
We should, because both of these special teams are iffy.
Yeah, because I seen Oklahoma State game versus Boise State. I've seen San Diego State versus Boise State. So I've seen field goal kicks been blocked. I've seen missed kicks. We've basically seen it all from either side, good and bad.
Well, we saw this game a few weeks ago where special teams came in and nearly made a huge difference in how it played out. Yeah, you know, not only in the fact that, what was it, Hayden Hogarth missed a field goal?
That first field goal, yeah.
Or was it Asa Fuller that missed? I don't remember who,
but they switched kickers.
Let's put it like this. Blake Cusick has been a weapon for Fresno State all season long. But what happened in the first matchup was that Boise State was able to turn Fresno State's field position game against them. Let's not forget that the average field position, there was a difference of nearly 10 yards between these two teams the first time around, with Boise State coming out way ahead. I'm guessing that's not going to happen twice.
It's hard to predict that, because what if there's just a good defensive stop somewhere?
Like, well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like if the offense gets bogged down, Blake Cusick can play a much bigger role in this game than he did in the first game. Yeah, but more to the point, neither of these kickers are very good.
There's not. There's no no John Barron out there kicking. No Cooper Rush kicking to this game.
And if you recall the first matchup, where when they were down 7, they chose to kick a 50-yard field goal with Asa Fuller. And it got blocked, right?
Yeah. Naturally, yes.
I can guarantee you that they're not going to do that again. Whoever wins this game is going to need touchdowns to do it.
So we'd punt? That's it. What would you do? Wait, would you punt, though?
Heaven help the team that has to rely on their kicker in this game. Because
watch this game come down to a game-winning kick.
Because if it's one of those things where what was it? He Fuller just barely made the field goal right before halftime, like snuck it right between the uprights, and then they sent it back out there again. And I was watching the game and I was thinking, why are you doing this? Why not just go for it? And we saw that Boise State had a willingness to do that. They put the game in Rippon's hands in a couple of key situations, and he made it pay off. And so I'm thinking that this game is going to unfold in such a way that they'll probably have to do it again. You know, it ended up being pretty even, all things considered. Both of these teams were 1 of 2 on fourth downs. But don't be surprised if they're in those close and late situations where it's like, I don't know, 4th and 3 at the 35 or something like that, that they choose to put the game in the quarterback's hands. Because regardless of whichever team you were rooting for, that would be the move that I would make.
So even if, say, it's like 4th and 7 at the 33-yard line, you would still punt? Go for it?
No, I'd go for it.
Would you? Okay, I'm asking this because sometimes when it's kind of far, iffy to go for it or not, would you? Because 4th and 7 is not close, which means you're not running the ball, or at least you shouldn't run the ball because you're a dummy if you are that far out. Would you go for a home run play, and if it's picked off, whoever, who cares? Or actually try to gain a first down and progress for points? Because if it gets picked off deep, it's like a kind of a punt.
I
know situation is everything, and you can't say a blanket statement, but I might just go for it, man. Why? Because getting 7 yards is not exactly extremely easy, especially fourth down, especially if you're the road team for if it happens at Fresno. But
I'm just hoping they're not running like 5-yard crossing routes on 4th and 7. Oh, no, that's really all I'm hoping for either team. I mean, I don't think that's going to happen. I think based on what I've seen from these two teams, it's more likely that Boise State takes the shot.
Yeah.
But that doesn't necessarily preclude Fresno State from doing the same thing.
Matt, will there be a Randall Cunningham style pooch kick in this game to punt the ball from the quarterback?
Oh, man, I wonder if there are odds on that.
Because in the situations we're talking about, if it's like 4th and 8 and you're at the 32-yard line.
I mean, that would be amazing, but in this kind of game with backfired this kind of stakes,
so bad.
I would be shocked.
I just thought that because I'm thinking, if it's that scenario, keep your offense in there. You go 4 wide, 1 back next to you to help protect who knows what's coming at you.
Uh-huh.
Would you like to see that happen just because of the options?
No, I wouldn't.
Would you like to see Boise try that?
If they're going to do that, they might as well just go to Cusick. or Quinn Skillen.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Yeah, I guess so. Have we exhausted all the options of this game since we're now talking trick special teams plays?
I think we might be all set, yeah.
Okay, let's give our – I teased it earlier, which who knows if you already saw this. I use Pick Center sometimes for to check out the numbers here. Over under 53 points.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds about right. TeamRankings.com. Boise State 26.6 to 25.2. Smaller than the 2.5-point line. Number Fire predicts a Fresno State victory, Matt. 29.5 to 28.1.
Mm-hmm.
I do know what S&P said. Has it changed since earlier in the week?
Based on the article that I pulled up today from Bill Connolly, I don't know what it said earlier in the week, but they have it Fresno State 31, Boise State 26.
Oh, that's more because it said, well, maybe it's rounded. It's 4.1 at the stat profile. Does that make you nervous, scared? Holy crap, it's a potential 5-point win by what the computer calculations say.
No, it's going to be closer than that.
Is this going to come down to like last year, essentially, the last title game where Fresno's dry, even though there wasn't like the game sealing play, like if they win, they wouldn't have won. There's still time left, if I recall. Is it going to come down to who has the ball last and scores? Not that it's going to be back and forth, but it'll come down to like a walk-off type play.
I mean, the ins and outs of discussing all of these advantages and disadvantages on both sides of the football.
It's going to be a tie.
If there's one big takeaway from our listeners, it's that they're so interwoven with one another that the way that I see things going, I don't know if it's going to be a walk-off situation, but it's going to come down to like three or four instances where you can point to and say, if this had gone differently, the game would have been much different. You know, maybe it's Curtis Weaver dropping McMarion for a sack on like second and four, where all of a sudden it's third and long, they can't complete, and they're forced to punt. And maybe Boise State turns that into a field goal. Maybe it's, you know, Blake Cusick pinning Boise State inside the 10-yard line at, you know, when the offense stalls at midfield. Maybe it's, you know, AJ Richardson with a, you know, one toe down catch for 40 yards down the sideline or
Or
something like
Keyshawn
that.
Johnson battling Horton for a muscle play for a touchdown.
Something like that. Yeah. It's just one of those instances where these two teams are so even and so many different things can happen that, like last year's championship game, like the game we just saw a few weeks ago, this game is going to be very close one way or the other.
So what's your score prediction?
I hate to say it, but I have Boise State winning this game.
Okay.
I have the Broncos winning 24-21.
Okay. That's close. It's tough.
Yes,
It's
it is.
like I said before, Boise is as undefeated at home versus Fresno the past year for
Forever.
except for what on the blue turf, and then their only win was what 1984, I want to say, right?
That's so forever.
And
That's
yeah,
close enough.
long yeah, basically forever. We're the next century. Come on, folks. So it's I think it's going to be close. It's What would shock me the most if anybody wins by, say, 12 or more points?
No, it's going to shock me if it's more than like 4 points.
Oh, you think so? It'll be that close?
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's going to be 3 points or fewer.
Weather, there's potential for precipitation, Matt. Just throwing that out there.
Who do you think that favors if that happens?
Nobody. I'll tell you, it doesn't favor the fans who are going to be stuck in rain and snow, maybe.
I guess that's a good point. Yeah.
Favors me because I'm at my house watching.
All right. That's a fair point too.
I don't disadvantage kicking special teams kicking. You know what I mean? Like if there's rain, ball's wet. That's does it help favors the special teams defense? I guess that because everybody has to deal with it together. Maybe the offense receivers a bit because if it's I don't know how wet it'll be. It's only like about a 40% chance, so it's not like it's going to be a downpour snow football, which would be amazing. Title game, snow football, New Year's Six game on the line, right? All right, Matt, I'm done talking weather. I'm done talking wet footballs, special teams, me being comfy watching this at home on my new TV, which is Black Friday's fun. So I made one good deal at Black Friday. So your prediction again was a Boise State victory, correct? Am I don't
Yes.
want to forget that. 24-21.
24-21.
So I can't make that same pick because that was kind of in my wheelhouse, what I was thinking.
Why not, man? No, nobody's blaming you for making the same pick.
But what you're saying is that a field goal is going to decide this game.
Yeah.
I'm going to say 28-21. No, I can't because that's too many points. I can't do it. I'm going to pick Boise State because mainly because they're at home and they don't lose at home, and that's kind of lame. But also they won last time, and I think I don't know. I'm just going to go Boise State to win. I'll be a little different. I'll go 24-20.
That's not that much different, but I get your drift.
It's lame. Come on, right? Come on, it's lame.
It's not.
Okay, one last question here, and this will be addressed to both of us here. More,
Okay.
I guess, more so for you. What's the one player that's going to make a difference in this game that's not like a star player?
Besides all the people we talked about?
Essentially. Well, there's a couple guys you can bring up. I'm not going to say no, you can't. But, like, Burp is the difference. Duh, come on. McMarion, obviously, big difference maker. Name, like, a player that's kind of not the typical guy we hear of. Like, there's always that one guy who makes some crazy play, like a strip sack or a kick return or something. Like, is there any player that you say, hey, this guy, I could see this guy doing something that's not kind of a main guy?
Well, besides the two new guys on the front defensive line, Iacopo and Bellany,
mm-hmm.
I think Michael Walker, if he can show up and have a big game, because he did lead the team in tackles for loss after all, and he did have three sacks, if he can find a way to solve Ezra Cleveland, that's something to watch.
I'm going to go this way here. We kind of mentioned this guy's name, so don't crucify me too much. And this is for Fresno's reasoning, too, because we already picked Boise to win. I'm going to say, here's why Fresno may have that chance. I think it could be Jameer Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
We did mention him, so don't – and I kind of joked the play action over the top. Last time he played Boise State, he only had 1 for 6. That's not going to happen again.
Mm-hmm.
He – for San Diego State, who arguably has an overall better secondary, he went 2 for 94 and a long touchdown. So I think he's going to have a game. It might be just look what he did versus UCLA, 3 for 53. I'm betting there's going to be one long touchdown pass, and it's going to be to him, and that's going to be kind of a difference in this game.
Well, I'll throw one out there for Boise, too, because why not?
Yeah, well, might as well. We can't be – well, we are homers for Boise, apparently, but whatever.
Well, Khalil Shakir.
Yeah, he's pretty good, right?
He was a difference maker in that first matchup. It would not be a surprise if he were a difference maker in a different kind of way. You know, maybe he doesn't go 4 for 4 as far as catches on targets, and maybe he doesn't quite score the game-winning touchdown – but don't be surprised if he makes a difference on the ground, because that's something that he's done here and there all season long. And while the Bulldogs mostly held that in check, there's still something to keep an eye on. If he can get open on a fly sweep and make something happen with just one big play, like we've seen for the last 372 days, that one big play is often what it takes.
That's true. One play, because these teams are so close, so... everything. They're spot on, essentially. All right, I'm going to hear Boise State. How many returns does Avery Williams doesn't have that many returns this year, does he?
Not as much as you might expect. He only has 15 punt returns to his name, and he's only averaging about 8.5 yards per carry.
He's going to have a big return in this game and make a difference.
All right.
He's basically their main punt guy. Not great. Air Force, he had a pretty good return. Colorado State, just a couple, but he's going to – I look for a big punt return from him.
Okay.
Not necessarily touchdown, but maybe flip the field, short field, which would in turn lead to a Boise State score because they had to go, say, 50 yards instead of 80 or 35 instead of 60.
Yeah.
So I'll go with him because that's a – and it's not like it's a – that's a shot in the dark. Not really a shot in the dark because he had two punt returns for touchdowns last year. He had that big one versus Fresno last year. He had 41 yards in the second game. So I predict him to have a – if there's going to be a big difference, that's not by kind of a major player, I think he'll be it for Boise.
All right.
I think we're done, right? An hour, of course, what we do, right?
I think we are. Now all we can do is wait and see what happens.
Sit back and wait until – at least it's not a 7:30 Pacific kick, right?
That's true.
We can enjoy some games throughout the day. I recommend – obviously UCF, Memphis, Texas, Oklahoma, going to be, what, 64 to 63? I don't know. Something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
Something wild. And also, did you hear the Golden Hat is not in the line despite it being a rematch?
I did hear that. That makes sense because they do the same thing with the milk can in this Boise State President's Day game. The Broncos have the milk can, and it's going to be theirs for another couple of years.
Oh, that's right, because they don't play. Nice mm-hmm. slide. Nice dig a little bit. Or whatever, or sad, whatever. Yeah, they need to keep for a couple years. That's it for our show, MWR.com. Check it out. We are on a record streak of people visiting the site, listening to the podcast. So kudos to you for doing so. Thank you. Tell your friends to get this podcast. If you already know you're listening, but it's your first time, hey, where do I get this again? All I found on the website. Well, obvious answer is iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spreaker, TuneIn, Blog Talk Radio, basically anywhere you can find a podcast. I believe we're on Last.fm. I keep forgetting to check. But basically, if you search Mountain West Wire Podcast, Matt, we're going to show up, right?
Oh, yeah.
And we'll be back, even if Fresno loses, to talk to Katie's Matt. We'll be back Sunday to talk about this game, and then who knows? It'll be exciting. So thanks for listening. Thanks for reading. And until next time, folks.